What's that clock there say, the glare's on it?
3:26. 2:26.
Well, we'll wait another 4 minutes. We don't want to start early.
God.
I'd hate to sit
early.
It'd be a bad time to start early.
It's 3:29 by the GPS.
I got 3:30. I'll call Resources Committee to order. Senate Resources, this is January 23rd, 3:30. First, I'd like to welcome Senator Albert Kukesh to the Resources Committee, replacing Gretchen Guest, Senator Guest from Anchorage. I'd like to note that Senator Stevens is here, Senator Stedman, myself, Chairman Wagoner, Senator Fred Dyson, Senator Kukesh, Senator Elton. Got them all right. That's the first time I've ever done that. And with that, the first bill we're going to hear today is House Bill 107, Hunting and Fishing Interference. And Jim Pound's here to present this bill for Representative Ramirez. So, Jim?
Thank you, Mr.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On behalf of Representative Ramirez, he has a finance subcommittee meeting in the other body right now that he's working on. He's going to try and get up here in just a little while. For the record, I'm Jim Pound, Chief of Staff for Representative Ramirez. House Bill 107 is based on language, in part, it was written years ago by the legislature when we addressed a growing concern of both individuals and groups who were obstructing hunting, trapping, and even wildlife viewing in the state of Alaska. When an obstruction takes place, the offender can be charged with criminal activity. They can also be charged in a civil case by the aggrieved person. Juries in some cases have awarded as much as $200,000 in these aggrieved civil cases. But under the current system of law, only reasonable attorney fees and costs are not necessarily always awarded by the judge and or jury. This has somewhat of a chilling effect on those costs, as they are directly passed on to the plaintiff rather than the defendant. An individual has to consider right up front what it's going to cost him in attorney fees before he would pursue a civil action against an individual who had prevented him or her from participating in an outdoor activity. HB 107 corrects this error in the law. It allows the court to authorize reasonable and actual attorney's fees when it comes to the prevailing party in either case. It sends a clear message to those who would attempt to prevent people from enjoying the outdoor activities in the state of Alaska from earning a living that they will end up bearing the full cost if a civil case is brought before them. It also tells our Alaska hunters, trappers, and wildlife viewers that we support them. And we urge your support for House Bill 107. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee? I've got one question I'd like to ask. I saw someplace throughout the packet I've got that a helicopter caused fish. I suppose that's jumping out of a seine? So there was a pursuit brought against the state? Cover that a little more, would you?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the exact specifics of the case. It was a lawsuit that was brought against a Fish and Wildlife Protection officer. My understanding was it primarily had to do with hunting, where a Fish and Wildlife Protection helicopter was too low, or according to the individual, he was too low and scared and scared away the game. I think there was also a similar case having to do with fish, and that was in a commercial fishery. And we have language that we specifically put into this bill to prevent that from happening in the future, so that if it is a law enforcement officer in the line of duty, they are not considered obstructing in this particular case because they're doing their jobs.
But is that, I had a little problem with that because that's what I saw. it may be necessary for a fish and game officer to fly over a commercial fishery during an open period to police the fishery, but to get close enough to cause fish to leave a net, that's a little above and beyond what they really had to do to properly observe of what's going on in the fishery, I would think. So what we're doing is holding them harmless from any egregious act they might elect to perform during a open commercial fishing period. That's I don't know about that. I'm gonna have to think about that. Senator Stedman, you had a question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious how we keep, when we start using the words doing wildlife, how we separate the hunting and the trapping and the fishing from in a multi-use area with people that may be out there just viewing. And then another scenario could possibly be how you deal with people in a multi-use area that may be cross-country skiing versus running around on snowmobiles or four-wheelers.
Is that a question?
Yes.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, primarily what we're looking at is, and I think that language is. Give me just a second to find the specific language so we can reference it by the bill. And would be on page 1, line 6, is to intentionally obstruct. And if we go into descriptions of the term intentionally obstruct or hinder another person's lawful hunting, there has to be a willful attempt to intentionally obstruct. And as using the example of the snow machine, that would not necessarily be a willful, would not, I don't think would be in a normal case willful, considered willful or intentional, as opposed to simply a case of where in a multiple use area, it's obviously set up as a multiple use area. And if a snow machine went by and caused an animal to move, I don't believe that would be considered intentional.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you. Yeah, Mr. Pound, on page 2, lines 20 through 22, why was the exclusion of commercial fishing?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, this was something that came from Representative Seaton, having to do with commercial fisheries where they start getting close together when they're in a short opener. And we did not want this law to come into effect where they're working in close proximity to each other, and one of them may decide to use this language to try to fend off another commercial fisherman from working a particular area.
So it was with in mind that it would be a fisherman challenging a fisherman instead of a third party challenging a fishing operation, you mean?
Through the chair, that is correct, Senator Stevens.
Further questions? Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Jim, let me give you a scenario that is maybe a follow-up to Senator Stedman's question. I mean, what happens if a snow machine is operating in our wetlands refuge, which bans the use of snow machines, but there is wildlife viewing, there's hunting, waterfowl hunting. If a snow machine goes out, does a hunter or a wildlife viewer have an action against that snow machiner that is, and is the punishment for that snow machiner greater under these provisions or under the provisions of just simply running a machine where they are not supposed to be running a machine?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, I would believe that would be based on the criminal activity as to what, and I would, I've never considered that scenario in that someone illegally operating a snow machine or four-wheeler or whatever in an area where they're not supposed to be, how this law would play into effect on that one. I mean, obviously there would still be the criminal charges, but I don't believe the criminal charges in this case by the state would be for interference or obstruction. I would imagine they would go for the charge of operating a snow machine illegally in an area.
But they could, Mr. Chair, just follow up. I mean, there could be multiple actions then against that snow machine operator because of the provisions of this law.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, in all honesty, I would believe there could be multiple infractions under existing statute, excluding what's already here, what the amendments are.
Senator Stedman?
Yeah, just, Mr. Chairman, back to kind of my previous question. Again, it's kind of a follow-up to the last one. Senator Elton, and when you get into a multi-use area like the Tongass, you have areas that people view wildlife, and they're also the same areas that are most advantageous for hunters to hunt because there's the game is there. And I'm still curious on how you differentiate in a multi-use area the issue of the parties that are viewing the wildlife versus a party that may be out hunting game to feed his family, and if we're not setting up a collision between those two.
Through the chair, Senator Stone, once again, I think the collision is already established in some ways in existing statute. And I believe that essentially what you know, and I'm not exactly sure how the Department of Public Safety is dealing with that particular issue right now in a criminal case where we would have a viewer and a hunter in a specific area, and who charges whom and how do they charge and who gets priority. I think that's something that's actually left up to the arresting officer on the criminal side of this. I believe most of these cases would end up being going through criminal court prior to going into civil court.
Senator Stedman?
Unless I'm misinterpreting the bill, doesn't this bill make it more likely than less likely for someone to pursue litigation in these cases?
Through the chair, or Senator Stedman, it would only because it allows the award of full attorney's fees, which has not been the policy in the past.
If I could, just one last
Senator Stedman?
Just one last follow-up point. Then it just seems to fall in that we may be enhancing this potential issue in multiple use areas if you happen to be fishing in the stream versus someone that may want to photograph the trout in the stream, or if we're dealing with with hunting of deer or whatever we're going to hunt, bear or what have you.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I would believe that is the intent of this. A lot of this came out of trapping, more so than hunting, and trap lines being cut. And that was kind of the impetus of writing the bill originally, was we had several instances in the interior where trap lines had been cut maliciously. And in some cases, at loss of the animals that were released in probably a rather painful way. And this is kind of was the impetus of the bill. And what we're trying to do with the bill is basically say that you will also be responsible if you are the losing party. You will also be responsible for full attorney's fees.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you. I see that the definition of full attorney's fees has gone from reasonable actual attorney's fees to 90% of the fees in one version, and now back to entitled to costs and reasonable attorney's fees again in the latest version that was passed. This may be a question for law, but what other incidences is a prevailing party entitled to full attorney's fees?
Through the chair, give me just a second, Senator Stevens. In eminent domain cases, right off the top of my head, the prevailing party is entitled to full attorney's fees.
And did I hear? I'm sorry. Can I go
Senator ahead? Stevens?
Did I hear you earlier say that you thought that this would be a criminal? This would be a criminal court or a civil court?
Through the chair, there's both criminal charges available to the Department of Public Safety as well as civil. We are referring to civil.
Civil here.
Yes.
But you say that, so there is a precedent with full attorney's fees recoverable by the prevailing party?
Through the chair, yes, there is in eminent domain cases. It's in the, it is, excuse me, it is in court rules.
It is.
Senator Elton?
Process question. Does this go to judiciary also? Or?
Yeah. I'm not going to move this bill today. We'll have another round with it on Monday and then move it. Any other questions of the committee? I've got one. An actual hypothetical, how's that sound? In Bristol Bay, I believe that there's no required distance between drift gill net gear and set net gill net gear.
Wrong.
Hmm? It is required.
Yep.
What is the requirement there?
Is it 100 feet or 100 yards off their standoff buoy?
It's been increased recently. I think it's 250 yards.
Well, it's been increased then. Like in Cook Inlet, I believe it's 600 yards. So we got different places. Anyway, the point is we got Bristol Bay is different than Cook Inlet. And let's see, where else do we have set nets? Prince William Sound?
Southeast.
So all through the state, we've got different requirements or different laws covering different similar gear types in the same area. So I guess we really need to look at that phrase that an action relating to commercial fishing, because many times Fish and Game will refuse to become involved when there's an estimation of distances that another gear type is fishing from a gear type. And I it's going to be real confusing, because the Fish and Game won't become involved. It's going to be awful hard for a set netter, say, to go into civil court and say, this guy was this far from my gear, and bring a civil action without a criminal action taking place first. You following me?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I would, I'm not real positive on this, but it would seem to me that one fisherman can bring it to another fisherman against another fisherman through an administrative action, since a lot of that is governed by regulations.
It's kind of, let me continue and then I'll get to you, Senator. It's kind of like a finding of facts, though. Without some some starting point, it's really hard for a set netter to say, I stood on shore and I can prove categorically or guarantee that this guy was within 600 feet of my net. In other words, you could be within 400 feet and there's still no given way to measure that unless you got another buoy located out there that is an exact measurement. So that's the problem I'm seeing with that. Senator L.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. The more I listen to some of the questions, the more questions I have. And a question of Jim, and you don't need to answer now if the bill's going to be held, but I'd be interested in knowing. On page 2, lines 4 and 5, where it talks about physically interfering or tampering with equipment, would this allow a guild netter in Southeast Alaska to have a private action against a Princess cruise ship or a tug and barge if, in fact, their net is run over?
Through the chair, Senator, I'll not have to look that one up.
Okay, thanks.
I would think so.
I would think so, too.
Any other questions? Senator Stevens?
This is more towards Mr. Powell. Maybe we can talk some more after the conclusion of the committee, but it seems to me that page 2, I've lost which version I'm on. This is the one. 17 through 19. Is that the latest one?
Yeah, version X.
Yeah, version X. That, as I stated before, I think that the it's my interpretation, the intent is to prevent a third party from intervening in the action, not to prevent those individuals that are engaged in commercial fishing. So if it's a commercial fisherman engaging in commercial fishing and they're competing or ramming or corking each other, the commercial fishermen tend to love to do, that doesn't apply to this. The intent is to apply to the individual that's not engaged in the activity. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, on the commercial fishing side of it, that My understanding when Representative Seaton, I am not a commercial fisherman, so I'm not aware of how the game is played out there, that it was to prevent commercial fishermen against commercial fishermen using this law to stop that action. In the other cases of what we're referring to, especially in hunting, and hunting primarily in trapping, is a situation of where a person comes, an individual has put out the trap line, or an individual is out hunting, and another individual or group of individuals come out and specifically chase away the game or cut the trap line to prevent the first individual from gaining access to it for the purposes of hunting, trapping, or wildlife viewing.
I think we need to talk.
Sir Stevens,
if you're going to hold the bill, I think we can talk and work this out for next time around.
Yeah, because you said to stop that action, and I'm thinking to bring that action. So, yeah, we need to get a better understanding of that, because I don't see any reason, Mr. Pound, to preclude one commercial fisherman from bringing an action against another commercial fisherman. I don't know why Representative Seaton took that stance, but there's all kinds of actions among commercial fishermen that could result in a civil action. I mean, Senator Dyson?
Yeah, I assume that the purpose of this bill is to, by and large, to keep activists of one sort or another who don't like hunting and fishing and trapping from interfering with it. And I can tell you that trying to figure out how to make this work in a competitive commercial fishing operation, something you give your life to, and I suspect the sponsor doesn't want to delay the action on what I think is a very valuable bill while we sort out all the things that commercial fishermen do to one another. Am I correct?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, you're absolutely correct.
I just want to make it clear and put it on the record what we're doing then, because this could preclude some action that could be taken at a future date. So, Senator Stevens?
I agree with Senator Dyson, but it wasn't the sponsor that inserted the clause about commercial fishing. I agree. I just think we need to understand that the consequence, if we're going to have that in there, I need to personally absorb it a little bit more to see what the outcome is. But I agree with your statement.
Yeah. And so is your question, does this insertion of that phrase on line 18, page 2, not clear what the intention of that insertion is there?
Well, it has to do with the issuing or the, that the prevailing party is entitled to full of reasonable costs. Why wouldn't they be? That's why I don't understand why it's entitled in there. I just need to talk to the members. I won't delay any more about commercial fishing. No,
yeah, no, me neither. But I guess the point I was trying to make, commercial fishermen aren't the only party that could be put in this category, and it just seems like commercial fishermen were inserted in here. You know, we could have a lot of other different groups that we could insert in there. And so if we insert one, I don't know whether it's a good amendment to the bill or not. But anyway, we'll let you off the hook right now, Mr. Pound.
Thank you, Mr.
And I'm going to hold this bill, and there are no people online to testify. And is there anybody here in Juneau that would like to testify who isn't signed up? Seeing none. We're going to hold this bill until next Monday. We'll have it before us again. And take action at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee.
Next bill we have before us is HB 269, Hazardous Substance Release Liability. Representative Ramirez, the floor is yours.
Nice to see you all. For the record, I'm Representative Ramirez, and I would have surrendered my seat to you this morning, Mr. Chairman.
But you didn't.
Well, I would have.
Thank you.
Helping me today is Jane Pearson, who's a paralegal in our office, and helped me through HB 269, which has caused some uncertainty here with the state's cleanup laws through DEC. And we want to try and clarify this a little bit so that we can maintain a cleaner environment and proceed in an expeditious manner to do so.
That it?
That's about it, sir. This is left over from last year, and I've just been relearning this, but it's good public policy for the state of Alaska. And it has to do with the Cooper Industries versus Avial. I understand it conceptually and support it, but I'm not an attorney. I get very uncomfortable to tread in places where attorneys ought to and the rest of us ought not.
All right. Thank you, Representative Ramirez. Are there questions by the committee? Senator Stedman.
I'm just kind of curious, Mr. Chairman, how it works when we the severability of the liability potentially when it backs up from one previous owner to another one, if there's a issue with contamination. And I'm just wondering if on disclosure, if one seller fully discloses the contamination to the buyer, if that works as a severability point in time.
Okay. My understanding is currently there is confusion as to when a lawsuit can be undertaken against another potentially responsible party. There is joint and several liability, but the actual time the action can be taken is what the decision in the bail really clouded the issue. Because what it said was you can go against another responsible party at such time as there has been a suit brought by the state or you've entered into an agreement with the state, and not from the beginning of the cleanup. So what this would do is from the time the state determines that there is an environmental cleanup issue and that the environmental cleanup will be taken by a private party, that they can go against other potentially responsible parties to help assist in the financial aspects of the cleanup.
And we do have online to answer questions from Department of Law, Breck Tostevin. Are you on there, Breck?
Yes, I am.
Get a little closer to the mic, please.
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay.
Are there any other questions of the sponsor? Senator Elton?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm kind of channeling for one of my Senate colleagues here, and I'm wondering as to whether or not Section 1, the findings and purpose, is necessary to the bill.
Senator Elton, through the chair. This is Jane Pearson from Representative Ramirez's office. And we looked at this too, and I think it will probably be taken out. It is going to judiciary next. So I think at that point it will probably be a letter of intent.
Okay. Any further questions?
Did I hear you say, excuse me?
Senator Stephen?
Did I hear you say it goes to judiciary next?
Yes.
Yeah. No further questions. I'll go to public hearing. There is the only person on sign is Breck Tostevin. Do you have anything to say?
Well, for the record, my name is Breck Tostevin. I would just simply say that the administration and DEC and the Department of Law support House Bill 269. And the reason we support House Bill 269 is that it ensures that the voluntary cleanup system that we have in place in Alaska goes forward, and it prevents us well, it would get rid of inefficiencies by requiring the state to sue people so that they can go and collect from other responsible parties. So it really is kind of an administrative efficiency clarification. So that's all I have, Mr. Chairman, unless someone asks questions.
Let me ask you just a question about a specific case. Are you familiar with the case in Sterling?
Yes, I am.
Now, this would apply in that case if there was an additional insurance company involved. Is that right?
This would allow a person who spent money cleaning up to sue other persons who are liable. I think the insurance situation, it wouldn't change the insurance situation. If a person has insurance, they would still have their rights to proceed against whatever insurance policy they have.
Okay. Thank you. George Lyle, are you? You just to answer questions, or you have support or objection to the bill?
We support the bill, and I'm willing to answer any questions many might have.
And who are you with? It says you're an attorney, but
yes, I'm an attorney with Gessen Rudd in Anchorage, and I represent a number of property owners who have property with hazardous substances, who have received potentially responsible party notices from the DEC. And who are now facing difficulties in trying to get other potentially responsible parties to share in the cost of the cleanup. As you may be aware, it's usually the current owner of the property that gets stuck with it first, and then it's their responsibility to try and get assistance from others who are responsible. And since the Avial decision was issued, we've had circumstances where settlements that were pending were withdrawn because the other party said, you can no longer come after me until the state sues you first. And we think that's unnecessary burden to make the state sue people in order for those people to have an opportunity to get contribution from others who are responsible for the problem to begin with.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Ramirez.
Thank you. That's what I meant to say in my introduction, was just that last part right there. That's
okay. Thank you, Mr. Lyle.
I apologize for the delay in joining the conference.
That's no problem. is there anyone in Juneau who wishes to be heard on this bill? I have nobody down. Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing at this time. Senator Stedman.
Yeah, I didn't quite hear the answer to my question, so either maybe at the next committee at Judiciary, they can look into, or maybe your office could get with my office and answer that severability issue on disclosure.
We'll have this before us next Monday. I'm going to hold it until Monday, and then we'll take action on it at that time. Well, with that, I'm going to put the bill aside. Like I said, it'll be in front of us next Monday. This Wednesday is the next resources meeting. We're going to hear House Bill 251, Commercial Fishing Multiple Permit Holder, and H.J.R. 17, Federal Lands Recreation Enhancement Act. Meeting's adjourned.